you very much. So the next 15 minutes, I'm going to try first of all to do it fast with the EMCAL program, and I'm going to report on two recent studies that we've done. One concerns the phenomenological classification of the variability patterns seen in the broadband radio spectra that we observe, and the other is going to do the radio behavior of the recently gamma ray light spectroids that have been observed by FEM. So very fast, I think most of you are familiar with that already. The F-gamma is basically a monthly monitoring program that we observe something like 60 FEM GST detectable sources running since January 2007. In fact, since then we have upgraded our sample to include only FEM GST detectable sources. So all in all, we have been observing over the last year something like 9 sources that the study I'm going to show relies on. All the light is actually in the spectra that we have been measuring are accessible online on our website. And technically speaking, we cover something like between 2.6 and 345 gigahertz at all frequencies. I think, to the best of my knowledge, this is the most rigorous study of that sort in the field. We have optical observations, and soon we're going to be getting optical polarimetry. A program that we have telescope in Crete, and recently we have set all the machinery for linear and circular polarization studies, all the data, at least coming from the FSB, as I will discuss. And that's why I asked Svetlana earlier what happened with DC 4.4, because the first test show that DC 4.4.3 is circularly polarized to 0.82%. That's what we measured last week. And if you think that's small, the highest, the extreme circular polarization that one can see in AGNs is over 1%. So, the core program, I think what? So, this is actually coming probably from Faraday conversion. So, the core program relies on the 100 meter telescope, the 30 meter telescope, and the APEX telescope that they cover this band between 2.6 and 345. But of course, as I said already, we utilize two optical telescopes, some other radio telescopes, the over 40 meter, and one of the KVN radio antennas. And of course, we have a collaboration with the Planck satellite and the Fermi GST. So now, after this very fast review, let me go to the first study that I'm going to report, which is the classification, the phenomenological classification. I will attempt to explain this with a very simple and obvious model. So in the previous Fermi-Jansky meeting, I told you that this is the product of the work of the F-gamma program spectra, which are summed pretty much monthly, not exactly monthly, but almost monthly. And broadband covering from these ones that you see here are between 2.6 and 145 or 42 gigahertz, including the IRAM data. From a first look, there is, of course, obviously, a wealth of phenomenologies that if you shuffle around, you realize that any of the sources we have ever observed, and this is based on something, as I said, non-sources, all of them can be classified in one of these prototypes that I show you here, which are 9 of them. But if you look carefully, they are labeled with types that they run from 1 to 5. So I'm going to be talking about 5 types, some of which have subtypes, and that's why you end up with 9 cases. The important thing is that those 9 plots, or those 5 classes, if you like, they can be further organized into only 2 classes. This class, which we think is caused by one mechanism, is characterized by intense spectral evolution, meaning that there is an intense variability of the peak or the shape of the spectrum within the bandpass. And another class, which is this one, which is caused, we believe, by a different mechanism, that the characteristic is that the spectrum is convex and it changes self-similarly in this prototype and shifts a little bit the peak frequency towards the lower frequencies as the flux goes up in this subcategory 5B. So the obvious interpretation, and this is the goal of this part of my talk, is actually to give a physical interpretation and see what we can do with that of this. So I'm focusing on the first mechanism that we think that is producing the spectral evolution dominated variability that we see. If one assumes the obvious case of having an optically thin quiescent spectrum attributed to a large-scale jet or whatever, which is populated by a flare that occurs at higher radio frequencies, then if one imagines that the gray area here is the bandpass of the abnormal program, or any other, of course, observational monitoring problem, then depending on the relative position and the relative broadness, and that's very important, those two parameters, relative position and broadness, we'd be seeing a different phenomenology. So for instance, if this was our bandpass relative to this spectrum of the source, we'd be seeing something like that. If this was the case, we'd be seeing this, and so on and so forth. And these are real data. Now this assumes that the quiescent spectrum is static, which it is, we believe, and this is also static, so it stays there forever. Now if we allow, though, for the flare to evolve, which is what we believe is happening, then we would see the observed spectrum that will look something like that. And these are all real data that I'm showing. And, well, as a matter of fact, this is exactly what we did, and we tried to reproduce this phenomenology with this model of the quiescent spectrum and a flare. And the question is, how can somebody modulate the position and the relative broadness of that? That can be done to our understanding of three factors. The source redshift. The source redshift is moving the source relative to the bandpass in or out. The source intrinsic properties do the same, such as the peak of the SSA spectrum or the outburst excess relative to this one, and so on and so forth. And of course, the spectral evolution, which is causing the dynamics of what we see. We have assumed that the flare itself that we populate the quiescent spectrum with is following the typical Marshall and Gear model, passing at these three phases of evolution of Compton, Shrinkleton, and adiabatic expansion losses, which is modeled by the factor P, D, R, S, and K, which are respectively the magnetic field, the Doppler factor, the jet opening angle, the spectral index, and the normalization factor. This is only technical. And we let it evolve. So this is what we got for 9 typical cases. So we took a very bright and medium and a weak source, and then we took it at 0, 1.5, and 3 redshift. And then we tried to see, we let it evolve. We started with these conditions that I expressed, and then we tried to see what the observables should look. And this is what we expect to see. And if you actually superimpose the observations, you can already immediately explain many of the types that we see. I remind you that we see 5 types, we think, and here we can explain already type 1, type 2, type 3, 4, and 3b. And this is only assuming that we have the properties of one source that we use as a prototype, which happen to be the properties of CT102. Now, in this simulation or calculation, if you like, what we have assumed is that the onset of the flare starts at the same exact level of flux with the quiescent spectrum. Now, last week we tried one more step of complication, which is actually to start off with the flare, this is the blue line, is at time zero, which is a little bit above the quiescent spectrum, or comparable if you like, a little bit lower and even lower, and let it evolve, and you see that we can even create more complication and so on and so forth. So we think that this is really describing everything. So this concerns the first 4 types of variability patterns that we see, and there was a second one, if you remember at the beginning of our talk, which shows the achromatic variability. All the sources that show such a behavior in our sample are those 8 sources that you see here. I repeat, all of them show convex spectrum, which changes sub-singularly. In some cases, a modification of those shows a very mild shift towards lower frequencies as the flux density increases. Now, could that be geometry or changes in the topology of the magnetic field or changes in the Doppler factor? We cannot tell anything yet. The only thing that we have had the time actually to do so far is to look at the 50 GHz Mojave maps of those sources. And to my understanding, apart from this case, all of them show an interesting dominance of a large-scale jet. Now, another thing, I'm very sorry for the low quality. Another thing which we try to investigate is whether there is any correlation between the type that we see and any of some typical properties of those sources, such as, for example, the redshift, whether there is a bias of the redshift, or whether some sources are mixed or stable, of the apparent velocities or the flux at the gamma rays from the 2-year Fermi catalog or the X-rays. And believe me, you have to believe me that there is not such an indication. However, that doesn't mean anything because our sample, I must say, and be honest, that it's highly biased or it's highly non-complete. So to conclude this part of my talk, I have to say that it's clear there are two mechanisms we think that they cause variability. One is causing a chromatic and the other is spectral evolution dominated variability. A very important point is that none of the sources switch type, which means that either the mechanism that is producing the variability is really a fingerprint of the source, like it's something characteristic of the source, or it is determined by properties intrinsic to the source that they change at least slower than what we could sample. Although this is already close to 5 years of observation, so I think that's a very good baseline that we have. The spectral evolution monitoring, though, this is very important to my eyes, that it's something really the microscales of the physics of those sources, because it assumes things like uniform emitting particles. And therefore, we could use this description that I did somehow in a reverse process to calculate the physical parameters of the sources. And as I already said several times, it's very unclear what is causing the achromatic variability. Now that concludes the first part of my talk, which is a recent work and it's ongoing. And I'm going to move on to the second one, which concerns the narrow line supergalaxies that have been observed to be gamma light. So very fast, the narrow line supergalaxies basically show permitted lines from the broad line region, but much narrower than typically those of supergalaxies or blazars. And they are found in spiral galaxies, and of course they appear to have been highly curvaceous. I think it was already mentioned. And have very low, comparatively low black hole masses, and they are typically radio quiet. Fermi GST detected four of those. I think now there are five. Anyhow, four of those, 0948 is the best study by us, and that's why I showed the maps here, a collection of maps done by Luigi Foschini. And as soon as they were detected, which was a groundbreaking discovery, I must say so, we started monitoring dedicated programs with the FSPEC telescope. Before I show the results of that, I have to mention that the luminosities in the gamma rays have been measured to be 10 to the 48 Erics, which seemed to be the first time such power has been measured from the lines in the galaxy once, and confirms that they hosted a bit picture as powerful as those in blazars or in radio galaxies, which is definitely a very interesting bit of what we started. This is all including this very interesting paper by Luigi. Now, as I said, we immediately, as soon as they were discovered, we started observing them in FSBEC. So here I show on the lower right panel the broadband radio spectra between 2.64 and 142 gigahertz with the FSBEC 100 meter and the 30 meter ion telescope for 0948, which is the best studied one. Here are the light curves at the same frequencies, and the first thing that you obviously see is that there is an intense variability of the source, intense spectral evolution of the source, and some fast structure function analysis that we did at least at 15 gigahertz shows that the brightness temperature, actually that's not obviously, that's not the log, that the brightness temperature is 2 times 10 to the 11, which corresponds, that should be delta, which should give a delta factor of order of 2. Similar is the behavior of 0324, the other one. Here again, you see the animation of the spectra, of the broadband spectra of this source. Each one of these lines is one spectrum separated by another, by the previous and the next by roughly a month. And you see again similar behavior. The source seems to be showing characteristic time scales of order of 200 and 660 days, which correspond basically to this trend and this trend, with a respective change in the flux density of 25% and 60%. That would again give a brightness temperature of order of 2 times 10 to the 11. And the Doppler factor is assuming, of course, for the calculation of that echo partition, 5 times 10 to the 10. That's what I'm taking as a reference value. Finally, the case of 1505, here is a very interesting, again, spectrum. To my eyes, this is not very different from what we have been observing with the thermal program, the other sources, but what is interesting is that the shape of the spectrum itself is rather peculiar, at least to my eyes and from my experience. So it shows very inverted and very steep, well, extraordinarily steep spectra from what we have seen, at least from the sample that we have been observing. I don't know what that they mean, but that's just a point to make. This is very early to say anything. Well, an attempt to see if those sources show any special behavior in terms of brightness temperature or Doppler factor seems that it's not the case. So here with the yellow, here, all these four plots are the brightness temperatures at 5 gigahertz, this is at 15 gigahertz, and this is at 32, and this is at 86 gigahertz. The yellow star shows where the 0948, because we have it best studied, would sit, and I would say that it's where the majority of the sources lie. And the only difference is that 1505, this is the Doppler factors, which are brought out from the previous histograms. This is the 1505, which seems to be at the high end of the distribution. So if I conclude also this part and finish my talk, the narrow line supergalaxies that appear to be radio allowed, they are particularly fast variability at radio bands. To my eyes, this is much faster than a month. So actually, a very thorough study would demand that we do that on the basis of 2 weeks or even faster probably. They show intense spectral evolution, all three of them, at least the ones we have studied carefully, and a blazar-like behavior in terms of max density variation, etc., etc. 0948 and 0324 show low Doppler factors, I would say, so typical values as we see for all the other sources in our sample, but the J1505 appears to be a little bit higher, although I don't know if that's really significant or worth studying. Now, at least for the case of 0948, there are already several multi-wavelet campaigns that run, and hopefully they will shed more light in this. So, thank you very much. I'll talk. Well, that's what being decided is. So.
Yes, the one of the problems. You take the local problems here, and both on our data file and our data file is going to be only 8.5%. If you have data file, it's 5. That's what I'm going to say.
Luigi reports 1.5 times 10 to the 8.
Yeah, so this is
It is as you say, because we have calculated from the variability in the data, so it's most likely the same.
That's great, it's an excellent device that brings the speed of the problem. So, it's not much more relaxing.
It's a high black hole analysis, and now I want to see the problems. Other questions? Chuck, this is what the model and then sum it up.
Basically, I if I understand the question, basically what we do is we assume a certain spectrum, and then the simulation just it boils down to basically shifting the turnover frequency and plus that problem. That's it for them. Yeah. This is what we do.
Calibration, you know, the use of dark particle acceleration wasn't necessary in that scenario.
But the metal in the big picture is pressing the solid metal. Well, you are. You're, what you're doing is you're pressing the power law and then, well.
Okay, I think we need to move.